Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, and all of it is sponsored by Casper Mattresses. Start sleeping ahead of the curve with Casper. Get $50 towards any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/lunch and using the promo code LUNCH at checkout. More on Casper a little bit later in the podcast. Jim, we should let folks know right up front, all of our discussion today will be about the results from Tuesday's special election in Alabama that fills the Senate seat once held by Jeff Sessions, who, of course, is the attorney general. It's Alabama. It's a deep red state. Even with the Republican Party split over Roy Moore, even with the allegations of child molestation from back in the 1970s, most folks expected Roy Moore to at least eke this out, if not win it fairly comfortably. That did not happen. He led for much of the early evening, but a little after 10 o'clock Eastern time, Doug Jones, the Democrat, went ahead, and he stayed ahead. Right now, it looks like Doug Jones just under 50% of the vote, 49.9%, Roy Moore, 48.4%, and write-ins, 1.7%, over 22,000 write-ins, which is more than the margin of victory for Doug Jones. So, Jim, as you put in the morning jolt today, it stings for Republicans to lose a Senate seat. It stings to lose one you already held. It stings to lose one in perhaps the reddest state in America. But the idea that Roy Moore will not be a distraction during debates in Washington and not be an albatross around the neck of every Republican candidate in 2018 is definitely an upside.
Are we happy Doug Jones won? No. I mean, this is a, you know, down the line pro-choice. In all likelihood, the Democrats are merely renting this Senate seat for about 3 years and change. They do not look, this is still going to be a very red seat. And once you get a non-Roy Moore nominee for the Republicans, you have a very good chance of winning that seat. It is deeply frustrating that they managed to pick the one guy who could manage to lose to Dougie Jones. I think, if anything, that the mood for a lot of Republicans this morning ought to be relief. And I, as much as you might say, oh, you know, we can live with it, or, oh, the media is always going to demonize a Republican, et cetera, et cetera. Look, I think it's very revealing that Roy Moore was not on the campaign trail for anywhere from the last weekend to the last 5 days. There's some report that he went to the Army-Navy game or something like that. But look, this is really, really unusual, right? We kind of made fun of Hillary Clinton's light campaign schedule during certain stretches of the 2016 campaign, where it looked like she might have been under the weather, wondering if she had health issues or something like that. Roy Moore did not have any health issues, unless you want to say psychological health. Roy Moore just simply could not be trusted in any given interview, speech, or public appearance to not say or do something that was going to risk the chances of victory even worse than they already were. His litany of oddball comments, controversial comments, just all around inability to not come across as an extraordinarily unappealing candidate, even by the, you know, even in Alabama and the, you know, by the tastes of Alabama voters, was pretty much unprecedented. This might be the worst candidate in the history of United States Senate races. And this is, you know, entirely separate from, I think, the very serious and fairly plausible allegations made by those women that he tried to pursue them in their teenage years when he was in his early 30s. If Roy Moore had won last night, there would be no way to keep him from speaking in front of microphones and television cameras. And it's a fair bet that if not every day, then every couple of days, he would say something that would be extraordinarily controversial, maybe something about, oh, we have too many constitutional amendments, we need to get rid of them or something like that. And, you know, they'd immediately the media would say to Mitch McConnell and every other Republican, so do you agree with Roy Moore that such and such? Just yesterday, one of the spokesmen for his campaign is being interviewed by Jake Tapper on CNN just a little bit before the polls close. They asked him why Roy Moore had said in the past that Muslims should not and cannot serve in the U.S. government, which is, of course, blatantly unconstitutional. And he pointed out it's because you have to take an oath of office on the Bible. And Jake Tapper looked at him a little bit confused and said, no, that's not the law. You can choose whatever book you prefer to be used for your taking of the oath. You're not legally required. And the guy just stared there dumbfounded as if he'd never heard of this before. We were dealing with not the A team, the B team. This was the Z team of Republicans down in Alabama. As one of one of McConnell's aides is, or former aides is quoted as saying in the Washington Post, this was, you know, if you literally any other Republican could have beaten Doug Jones in that state last night. And, you know, they managed to pick the absolute wrong guy. So all in all, it's going to be frustrating for Republicans. But you look at it, a 51-seat majority isn't enormously different from a 52-seat majority. And sometimes your primary voters completely step in it. They completely drop the ball. They nominate the exact wrong guy, both for the state and nationally. And so for Republicans, look, this is some short-term pain for some long-term gain, because they need Roy Moore to ride off into the sunset on that horse as soon as possible.
Jim, 22,783 write-ins. Who do you think got the most of those? We're thinking Nick Saban, Charles Barkley, Bo Jackson. Who's going to come out on top there?
Those are some pretty good choices. I wondered if some people, Richard Shelby, the other Republican senator from Alabama, basically said he had done a write-in himself. I wonder if anyone wrote him in saying, you know, just give him two votes. Really conservative, pro-life, never embarrasses us. He's really good. Give him two. That's fine. You know, he'll, you know, count his twice.
Oh, man. All right. Let's move on to the bad martini now. And that's the state of Republicans following 2017. Jim, there's a lot of finger pointing going on. We've talked about how Moore was not the candidate that could get the job done in Alabama. Right now, Steve Bannon is blaming Mitch McConnell. A lot of people in the more mainstream Republican Party are blaming Steve Bannon for trying to create an insurgency all over the place when perfectly capable candidates could have actually won this seat without too much trouble. People are talking about Mitch McConnell firebombing Mo Brooks in the first round of the primary and knocking him out of the runoff, which is fair game, I guess. And so when you look at what's happened here, Jim, there's some eerie parallels to 2009-2010. You look at the Virginia race, where after Obama had won in 2008, Republicans swept the offices by much larger margins in Virginia than anybody expected. That was Bob McDonnell and Bill Bowling and Ken Cuccinelli. And then shortly thereafter in Massachusetts, Scott Brown wins the Senate seat vacated by the death of Ted Kennedy over Martha Coakley. And here, of course, we've got Roy Moore losing to Doug Jones in Alabama. You can say, well, Roy Moore is a little bit different in this situation because there were no allegations of that type in the Massachusetts race. Mm-hmm. But there was a unique situation there. Obamacare was the thing hanging over that race. And that's a big reason why Scott Brown won. So this is a party that's divided, that seems rudderless right now. And if 2009 and 2010 are any parallel here, Republicans better do some serious soul searching, some serious course correction here, or they're going to face a pretty similar fate next fall.
That's very well put, Greg. Listeners know I'm not often a big critic of Mitch McConnell, but you know what? I think a certain portion of the blame can be placed at his feet for this. Yes, you know, that basically it's fairly standard for the national committees and party leadership to try to defend their incumbents. But Luther Strange wasn't really an elected incumbent. He was an appointed incumbent. While he had never voted in a way that irked the rest of the party, he did have that issue of how he had been investigating the governor. And then the governor said, hey, let's make you a senator. And he suddenly lost interest in that investigation. And that left a bad taste in the mouths of Alabama Republicans. That was a perfectly fair objection for them to have. And, you know, maybe McConnell really would have been better off if he left it, stayed out. Perhaps Luther Strange would have lost lost in that first round of the primary. He'd have a primary between Mo Brooks and Roy Moore, and maybe all of history would turn out pretty differently. If it really was an animosity of towards Mo Brooks for being too Tea Party or something like that, well, then Mitch McConnell was pretty short-sighted. On the other hand, it's not like he's got a magic wand for this primary. It is in the hands of Alabama Republicans. There is no Mitch McConnell mind control ray that caused lots of Republicans to vote against Mo Brooks. And I kind of at some point you have to ask yourself, OK, what do Republicans get out of future primary fights and challenges to incumbent Republican senators? Because the Steve Bannon playbook, we've shown what it gets you. It gets Democratic victories in Alabama, right? I mean, basically, the single most, if not the most ruby red state in the country, then it's got to be in the top five. Certainly, it feels very comparable to Scott Brown's victory in Massachusetts. If you want to point to a Republican incumbent senator who really you think needs to go, then I'd like to see serious policy-based arguments behind that. If not policy-based, then personal behavior, or some sort of scandal, something that really reflects badly upon the state, the party, and just is undeserving of being in public trust in the government. I just don't see what a John Barrasso type does for that. For most of these Republicans, the irony is, if you look at this, there are a great number of Republicans who are conservative, populist, Breitbart.com readers, Steve Bannon followers, are all just really, really mad at Ben Sasse. Ben Sasse hasn't actually voted against much of the Trump agenda. You could say the same thing about Jeff Flake. Now, they criticize Trump. They speak about it. But by and large, when Trump needs a vote, these guys line up and do what they can, because at least so far, a lot of what's come to the floor, the Trump agenda and the mainstream traditional conservative Republican agenda align a great deal. Now, I can understand why this gets under Trump's skin. I can understand he doesn't like being criticized. Nobody likes being criticized. But in the end, a guy who, will be verbally critical of you and critical of you in the media, but still turns around and votes the way you need him to when you need him to do so, that's a pretty valuable ally. You got to cut some of these folks some slack. I don't know if the president's noticed it. He was bragging about a 45 percentage point approval rating. That's not that good. And most of the polls have it significantly lower. So you got to cut them some slack. You've got to allow these people to be critical of a president, because, Mr. President, you're not that popular. And Bannon and the populace cannot go out on this vendettas doing their best. Because there's some who say, Bannon's goal is to blow up the Republican Party. Well, so far, he's very effective at that. That is like why any self-identified Republican or conservative would go with that, because, look, you got to be, you're gonna have one vote for abortion in Alabama for the next couple of years, thanks to the candidate that Steve Bannon wholeheartedly endorsed.
So many different things I want to say here. I'll point out two things, one of which you may not agree with. I'll save that for a second. First, interesting stat of the night, in addition to the fact that a Democrat actually won and a liberal won at that. Roy Moore failed to get half the number of votes that Donald Trump got in Alabama 1 year ago, just under 50% of that total. Doug Jones got almost 94% of the vote total that Hillary Clinton got. So there were a lot of disaffected Republicans. Some of them wrote in votes. Others obviously stayed home. And what this became with the Luther Strange versus Roy Moore runoff became, at least in the minds of Steve Bannon, and perhaps with Mitch McConnell as well, is a proxy war between Bannon and McConnell for the future of the Republican Party. And I think that's where a disunified Republican Party is right now. You've got the Bannon wing and the McConnell wing, and there's a lot of people who are like me who want nothing to do with either wing. Because in the end, I think both of these guys, while coming from very different perspectives, essentially want the same thing. They want power. They want influence. They want control. And they want someone to blame when it doesn't go their way. And in the end, neither of them really accomplishes much of anything.
I'm one of those guys who was very much on board with the Tea Party. I think the two most classic examples of this were Pat Toomey against Arlen Specter and Marco Rubio against Charlie Crist. I think in Specter and Crist, Specter formally flipped parties. Crist eventually left the party, became an independent, and then shifted over to a Democrat. And last I checked, was looking for new parties to run under. Just to complete his losing cycle. You have these guys who basically were, the term rhino applied pretty effectively, Republican in name only, that they really weren't willing to take an unpopular vote on principle because they deep down, their primary goal was to simply stay in office, stay reelected. That their principle is that I am awesome and I should stay in office forever. And I should never do anything that jeopardizes that, even if it's a bad idea, even if it's going to hurt the country, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know if that's really what was the animating spirit behind this populist insurgency against incumbent Republicans right now. I think it's just I'm mad at everything. Now, you shouldn't be mad at everything. You've got a president who you at least at one point wholeheartedly supported. And by and large, Republican lawmakers are voting for his stuff. There's a very big high profile embarrassment on the Obamacare repeal. And on that one, we could lay the blame. It's John McCain, Lisa Murkowski, and Susan Collins, and on and off Rand Paul. But all in all, those are four guys at a 52-seat Republican Senate. There's no point in punishing the other 48 because you're really mad at those four. And oh, by the way, you're not going to get a chance to take it out on somebody like Collins or Murkowski because they're not running for re-election for another couple of years. So anyway, that's where we are. And so, my expectations, this is just what you'd like to think this would be the closing battle in Republican infighting, but I doubt it will be that. I doubt that will be the case, Greg.
Yeah, we'll see when Doug Jones gets seated. We'll see if that happens before or after the tax vote. If it happens before the tax vote and it causes problems, that's going to raise a lot of hackles. Once these allegations came down against Roy Moore, the idea that this did not get done before December 12th, very frustrating. But looking ahead to November of 2018 for Republican political professionals, there could be a lot of sleepless nights, unless you choose a Casper. Casper is a sleep brand that continues to revolutionize its line of products to create an exceptionally comfortable sleep experience one night at a time. Casper mattresses provide all the support the human body needs in all the right places. After all, you do spend one-third of your life sleeping, so you should be comfortable. Casper brand mattresses combine multiple supportive memory foams for a quality sleep surface with just the right amounts of both sink and bounce. The breathable design helps you sleep cool and regulates your body temperature throughout the night, so you don't have to constantly toss off the blankets and then pull them back on when you get cold. There are three mattress models available: the original Casper, the Wave, and the Essential.
Now remember, Casper is not just a mattress company. They offer a wide array of products to ensure an overall better sleep experience. Casper can offer such affordable prices because they cut out the middleman and sell directly to you, the customer. With more than 20,000 reviews and an average of 4.8 stars across Casper, Amazon, and Google, Casper is quickly becoming the internet's favorite mattress. Casper is designed, developed, and assembled in the United States. They offer no-hassle returns if you're not completely satisfied, and your Casper will be delivered right to your door in a small, how-do-they-do-that sized box. They offer free shipping and returns in the United States and Canada. And you can be sure of your purchase with Casper's 100-night risk-free sleep-on-it trial.
That's over 3 months, in case you had trouble with the math. That's a long time to determine if you want the mattress, and they'll take it back for free. What's better than that? Start sleeping ahead of the curve with Casper. Right now, you can get $50 towards any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/lunch and using promo code LUNCH at checkout. That's casper.com/lunch and use promo code LUNCH for $50 off any mattress. Terms and conditions do apply. Jim, let's go back to the Alabama Senate race here. And as I mentioned, as of right now, Jones has just under 50%, 49.9%. Roy Moore, 48.4%. That's a span of almost 21,000 votes. By law, as it is in many states, if the margin of the difference is half a percentage point or less, an automatic recount kicks in. We are three times the span of that margin, and so an automatic recount does not kick in. Nonetheless, Roy Moore is not conceding this election. I'm not sure why. I'm not sure what he's waiting for. I'm not sure if he thinks everybody who wrote in someone wrote in him. But whatever it is, he's not going to make up that difference. And the fact that he can't admit that is just the final ugly chapter to a really ugly story all the way through the past several months.
Ugly, but not that surprising, Greg. Look, obviously, I'm sure it's never easy to make the concession phone call. No candidate ever wants to acknowledge their defeat unless they're absolutely 110% certain. If there's any possibility of a victory, they want to hold on to that hope. But I don't think it's there. Most observers don't think it's there. Not only, look, it's not just, you know, oh, could it be close? As you noted, the margin is now beyond 20,000 votes. You don't usually just find, oh, look, you know, like not even Al Franken can find that many votes, Greg. Not even in the state of Washington during those gubernatorial elections that they managed to find. That's a lot of car trunks you have to find uncounted ballots, you know. Look, this was a, you know, this is a sizable margin. It's more than three times what you would need just to get the automatic recount. Remember, an automatic recount, you know, you might see a couple of dozen shifts, you know, here and there. You know, I think we've seen maybe 100, 200 votes change in particular recounts. You don't see 20,000 votes get found. You just don't. You don't see 1.5% of that being done. Now, there are a lot of people who are hanging their hopes on saying, well, look, you know, write-ins, they don't count the write-in if the person named is not eligible for the office. By the way, Greg, I assume Nick Saban is a resident of the state of Alabama, right?
I would assume so.
Right. So he's certainly old enough. So Nick Saban is constitutionally eligible to be the next U.S. senator from Alabama. And let's face it, they can't do much worse. So let's basically they would count those. But if you write in Mickey Mouse or Donald Trump, right, I assume Donald Trump still a legal resident of the state of New York, then they would not count those and they toss them out. And some people say, aha, so we don't really know the final amount of votes. Some of these may get rejected. That will change the total number, which will change the percentages. Yes, but not very much. If you rejected every last one of the write-in ballots, you know what the margin is, Greg? It's still 1.5%. It's still three times the margin of what they need to be an automatic recount. So there's not going to be an automatic recount unless there's this unbelievable margin in the overseas ballots and provisional ballots. Somebody shows up without ID or there's something disputed about it or something like that. You're not going to make up 20,000 votes in that way. So in the end, yeah, we already know how this ended. This is not – there's just no magic wand or other scenario that suddenly gives Roy Moore the 21,000 votes he needs to win this race, which is why, if nothing else, something in there, he should have said something nice to Doug Jones last night. He should have said, this has been a hard race and I congratulate my opponent on, you know, fighting hard to the end or something, whatever you want. Put something there, but he didn't. Because Roy Moore doesn't really care about any of that stuff. Roy Moore cares about himself. And so my suspicion is that once this race gets certified, he will then start turning on to baseless allegations of voter fraud. And Greg, the illegals came in and the atheists came in and the Muslims came in and ISIS came in and MS-13 and all of these groups came in and cast lots of ballots. And that's why in Alabama, right, because there's no Republicans watching the polls in Alabama. And that's why he lost. It couldn't possibly because of anything that he had done wrong or his horse.
Jim, you know, all this talk about Nick Saban gives me an idea that I think you're going to want to push pretty heavily over the next couple of months here because, you know, Elizabeth Warren's seat is up next year. I think you should start a push for Bill Belichick to run for that Senate seat. We know that he supported Trump, so he's probably right of center. He doesn't talk much, so he wouldn't embarrass the party probably a whole lot. Plus, he would stop being coach of the Patriots if he won, which would make life easier for the New York Jets. What do you think?
Greg, I want you to be a reporter asking me about the failure to repeal Obamacare, and I will answer in the form of Senator Bill Belichick.
Here we go. Senator Belichick, one of the things Republicans promised to do in the past campaign was to fully repeal and replace Obamacare, but it hasn't happened. Why?
We're on to tax reform. Didn't get it done. Need to do it better, but we're on to tax reform.
Oh, I'm glad we could get a laugh out of this day. Jim, talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.